This recording was made in The Booth, a ministry of Preston Hollow Presbyterian Church in Dallas, Texas. Okay, ready?
Okay.
This is Mark Melson. I'm here with Terry Price, who was director of music at Preston Hollow Presbyterian from 1998 through 2015. And we're going to talk about Terry's life as a church musician. Terry, welcome.
Thank you, Mark. It's good to be here and I appreciate your time.
Tell us a little bit about your biographical information first. Where were you born and raised? Where did you go to school? And what churches have you served?
Well, I was born and raised in Stephenville, Texas. It's about 100 miles southwest of Dallas. My mom was a music teacher, and she played piano, and she was really good at playing Southern gospel style, and she worked long days, but she was a really loving, caring person and a great influence on my life. My very earliest memory is sitting on a piano bench next to her while she was playing for church. And then, in contrast, my dad was basically a horse trader. He had only a sixth grade education, but he made up for that in so many ways. He never met a stranger, and he was just one of the finest men I've ever known. I just can't exaggerate in saying I had the best parents ever. They were great. I did have two half-brothers who were almost grown when I was born, but I did grow up with one brother, Tony, who was just a year older. And he didn't make a career in music, but he is still the best musician in our family. He's just an incredible talent. When I was in elementary school, my brother and I sang in a kids' gospel quartet that my mom played piano for, and we would go around to these different churches in the area. They would have what we called singings, where people would just gather on an evening or on a Sunday afternoon and just sing gospel songs all afternoon, and we would sing for those, and we'd occasionally sing on the local radio station. But my music training really started when I was in the sixth grade. We had a great music program in our school, and I joined the band in the sixth grade, and I stayed very active in band all the way through college. In fact, it was my high school band director who influenced my life in many significant ways, especially my musical life. He influenced greatly, but also my sense of humor. He was a great punster, and I've always had an affinity for puns. And Mark, you and Blair are still my inspirations in that regard.
Well, I have a very high regard for people who have a good sense of humor. I think that's a wonderful trait to have.
Yeah. Going on to the, I did my undergraduate degree in music education at Tarleton State University, there in my hometown of Stephenville, and that was just a fantastic place for me to study. We had great professors and small classes, and I just don't think I could have gotten a better foundation in my education anywhere. My first 3 years, I was a woodwind major and planning to be a band director, which I'm trying not to choke just saying those words now, because that marching band would be a challenge for me now, I think. But about halfway through my school, we had a new choir director come in, and he got me so excited about choral music that I changed my concentration to vocal and choral music. And then after college, I taught high school choir for 6 years. I taught at R.L. Turner High School in Carrollton and then Nimitz High in Irving. And during those years, I had the opportunity to work an evening shift and weekends at a local recording studio, just trying to make financial ends meet a little better. But that was a great time for me. I worked mostly on jingles and radio call letters, but I just learned so much about the importance of critical listening through those years in the studio. But the biggest thing I think that happened in the years I taught was I went through a religious reawakening, I guess is a good term, and I felt a real sense of calling to go into church work full time. And I first thought I was being called to be a preacher, but I soon realized that my gifts were really in music and that there was a valid need for church musicians, and I'm so grateful that that worked out that way. I had been working when I was teaching at Plymouth Park United Methodist Church in Irving, just on a part-time basis, but it worked out for me to go full-time. And that was a real blessing. The church allowed me to go to seminary at SMU. They covered all my tuition and book fees, and it was such a great gift. I ended up staying at Plymouth Park a total of 10 years, part of the time doing both music and youth work, but the last 5 years or so just in music. And I moved from there to Lovers Lane United Methodist in Dallas, and I was there for the next 11 years. And that was a great place to serve with a lot of opportunities. And I feel I continued to grow as a church musician through those years. Then from Lovers Lane, I went to Peachtree Presbyterian in Atlanta. And then from Atlanta, we were so blessed to come back to Dallas and come to Preston Hollow. I treasure every church I've served, but Preston Hollow turned out to be a really especially rewarding part of my ministry. And I'll just always be grateful for my years here.
I think you covered every church except maybe your very first one.
Yes. I started during my college years, the last couple of years, I had the opportunity to serve part-time as director of music at the First United Methodist Church in Comanche, Texas. And that was about a half-hour drive from Stephenville. This all came about through a connection with the pastor of that church, who was friends with the head of the music school at Tarleton. It was a small church in a small town, but the people were just wonderful. And pretty soon we had a good adult choir, and we really had an exceptional youth choir there. They'd not had one there before, and it was a great experience. I learned so much, and one of the important lessons I learned was that the people are really more important than the music. And I hope that's stuck with me all through my years in church work.
You know, in 40-plus years of church music direction, there are probably many great moments that stick out in your mind, but what were some of the highlights that you can tell us about from your career?
Okay, well, I'll be happy to try to share a couple of those with you, and if I see you nodding off, I'll know that it's I've gone too far. But one of the first things that happened, I think, in the early 1980s, I was still at Plymouth Park United Methodist, but the United Methodist Church was planning a bicentennial celebration of the Methodist Church in America. And I was given a chance to put a recording together as part of that celebration. I lined up some of the top composers and arrangers of that time, and they came up with some really great arrangements of the hymns of John and Charles Wesley. In that project, I got to conduct a three-day session in the Abbey Road Studios with members of the London Philharmonic. And that, I still remember the thrill of standing in front of that group. I was still pretty young and actually pretty inexperienced at that time. And it was just a fantastic opportunity. And then we brought the recording back to Dallas and put together a large choir to add the choral parts to the orchestral parts here in Dallas. It was my first big recording project, and it was nominated for a Grammy, but it didn't win. In fact, I don't think it came even close. But that was a great project. And then thinking back about some of the other things, both the Lovers Lane and Preston Hollow choirs were invited to sing for some really neat festivals in Europe. And the Lovers Lane choir sang as the featured choir for the International Church Music Festival in Coventry. And then in 1994, the Lovers Lane Choir also sang for the Christmas Eve celebrations in Bethlehem. We sang in Manger Square and then sang for a service in the Church of the Nativity. And I would have to say that the experience in the Church of the Nativity was really one of the highlights, not just of my career, but of my whole life. That was just an incredible thrill. The Preston Hollow Choir sang for the Cambridge Summer Music Festival in England in 2005, and then for the International Church Music Festival in the Vatican, and that was in Rome in 2009. And thinking about it, another highlight came at the close of my career in 2015. The Preston Hollow Choir did a tour of England, and we sang at several beautiful churches and cathedrals. But the last night of the tour was just almost beyond anything I could have hoped for. We joined forces with the St. Michael Singers of Coventry and the English Symphony Orchestra, and we did a gala concert in Coventry Cathedral. I conducted a part of the concert, and the rest was conducted by three great musician friends of mine, Paul Ludington Wright, Bob Chilcott, and John Rutter. They're all English, and they're among the best-known choral conductors and composers in the world. And it was an incredible thrill to have such an experience as that. I would also mention, these aren't really quite on the same level, but it means a lot to me that during my time at Preston Hollow, we started the Candlelight Carol Fest and the Americana Concert, and both of those are still going strong after all these years, and that means a lot to me, too.
Terry, you've commissioned a lot of church music, commissioning where you hire a composer to write a piece. Who were some of the composers you commissioned, and what were some of the pieces that resulted?
Well, it's been really important to me, and I think it's a crucial mission for churches to ensure that great sacred music continues to be written. Over my years at Preston Hollow, right before I retired, I went through and looked at all the pieces we'd commissioned, and I really was surprised that we'd commissioned nearly 30 works to be written for the choir by some really wonderful composers. Most of these were anthems, but we did commission three multi-movement works for choir and orchestra. And I mentioned three English composers we used, Paul Ludington Wright, Bob Chilcott, and John Rutter. Both Paul and Bob wrote three or four anthems for us. Later, we were able to join forces with the Bach Choir of Austin, Oxford.
those good schools.
those universities get me every time. The Bach Choir of Oxford to co-commission Bob to write his Requiem, and that was in 2010, and that work has been performed all around the world since that premiere. So it was great to be a part of getting that work out. In 2015, we had another major work written for the choir by John Rutter. John is one of the world's highly regarded composers, and it was such a thrill to be able to get him to write for us. He came to Dallas to conduct our choir in the world premiere of his work, The Gift of Life. And that work's also taken on an exciting life of its own, and it's being performed in churches and even major concert halls around the world.
That was one of the great thrills as a member of the choir, that whole experience with Rutter doing the world premiere here and then performing it in England. And I know many in our choir feel that way.
It really was a thrill. And it also was a great gift to the church and to the community. And Mark, you may recall on the evening of that performance, we had we filled the sanctuary, and then we filled Emmanuel Hall for overflow seating for video, and we also had people in Jubilee Hall. So there were a lot more people here than we could get into the sanctuary. So I think it was something that spoke to a lot of the community. Some of the other people we've worked with that have written music for Preston Hollow, we've had people like Mac Wilberg, Ola Yalo, Tom Fetke, Ray Andrews, a guy I've known my whole life. Hal Hobson wrote some things for us, and Hal, of course, was the music director here. He and his wife Martha were a team, and they were here at Preston Hollow before I came. We had a composer from Wales, Jeffrey Howard, wrote a piece for us. And then we had two Emmy Award-winning composers, Gary Fry and Anthony DiLorenzo. Both of them wrote multiple pieces for us. And I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out. I apologize for that. But those people really gave us some great gifts of music. And I would like to add also that when I first came to Preston Hollow, I had to really search to find the money to commission any music. But after we had done a few pieces, members of the choir and congregation seemed to really grasp the importance of what we were doing. And there came a point when people simply came to me and asked if they might be able to commission something for the choir. They wanted to do it either in honor of someone or in memory of someone. And gosh, that was just an incredible blessing. And I won't even try to name any of the people because I will leave someone out, and I don't want to do that. But all those people that commissioned music for the choir are really saints in my book. And I also think it was important that we were often able to bring in great guest conductors, someone to conduct their own works or just to do a concert with the choir or do workshops or rehearsals with us. And I think the excitement of bringing in these guest conductors and commissioning new music for the choir really was of vital importance for the choir over the years. We brought in people like the late Sir David Wilcox, one of the world's truly great choral conductors. We had people like Craig Jessup, who was the former director of both the U.S. Air Force Singing Sergeants and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. We had the current conductor of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, Mac Wilberg, and his assistant conductor, Ryan Murphy. Both of them have been here several times. We had Paul Ledington Wright from Coventry and Bob Chilcott from Oxford, both on numerous occasions. And we had the chance to work with people like the Canadian composer Eleanor Daly and British composer Andrew Carter. And then, of course, we can't forget John Rutter coming to Preston Hollow. Those all brought varied experiences for the choir, but I think those opportunities to bring in guest conductors and commissioning new music, I think those were reasons that the choir continued to grow and thrive through the years. And I'm really excited that these traditions will live on. When I retired, the congregation gave me such an incredible gift by forming the Guest Composer and Conductor Fund. And so we'll be the church will be able to commission and bring in great guest conductors for the next who knows how many years. But that was about the most thoughtful and wonderful gift I could ever imagine.
Terry, people who describe the music at Preston Hollow would probably call it traditional church music. What types of music does the word traditional encompass?
Well, that could be a long tale to tell, but since the 1960s, I think there have been some real dramatic changes in church music in the United States. Back in the 60s, there was a wave of music that people might call folk music that kind of swept through many churches. And then that evolved into an even stronger feel of pop music or even rock music, I guess you could say. And that's still heard in many churches today, especially, I guess, in the more evangelical styles of worship. And I won't try to judge what's right and what's wrong, because I really believe God can speak to many different people through many different styles of music. And I think all of them are valid. But on the other hand, Preston Hollow, I think, has stayed grounded in what I think of as kind of a mainline style of traditional church music. We still sing from a hymnal instead of having only the words projected on a screen. We sing the Psalms almost every service. We have a choir that helps lead the congregational hymn singing, and they also will present anthems that reinforce the theme or and the spoken words of the service. And then where many churches have gone to using guitars, bass, and drums to accompany congregational singing, we still rely almost exclusively on the wonderful pipe organ that we have. And I think one of Preston Hollow's great strengths is that we know who we are in terms of worship styles, and then we've stayed true to that, to what's worked for us for so many years. We really haven't tried to be all things to all people. And at least to me, I think that's helped our congregation stay strong. It's also surprising to me, and I shouldn't say this, but it is, one of the things that seems to attract a lot of our younger, young adult members to Preston Hollow, and that is when they're asked what brings them to our church, they often say they came because of the traditional worship or the traditional music. And boy, I can only say amen to that.
What are the differences between sacred choral performances and secular choral performances?
Well, when a choir sings as part of worship, to me, the text is really the most important thing, more important than the musical lines or the harmony. The text really determines what we're trying to do in worship. The text lets us know who are we singing to and what's the purpose of our communications. Sometimes we'll sing songs of praise, or sometimes we'll sing songs of thanksgiving, and we sing those directly to God. The congregation can join in by listening, but, you know, that's really a time of singing directly to God. But depending on the text, sometimes we're singing directly to the congregation, and we may be trying to teach them something about God, or teach them something about our faith, or reinforcing a scripture. So depending on the text, we have different goals for the music, but every piece the choir sings in church is carefully selected for a specific purpose. And you'd ask me also about the difference in sacred and secular choral music. To me, the biggest difference is that sacred music has a holy purpose. Corporate worship, at least as I understand it, is about reenacting the story of God or God's story in our lives. Secular music, on the other hand, it can be really emotional, can be very moving, very beautiful, but the purpose is generally more leaning towards entertainment and not really, it's not like sacred music where our intent is to praise God or to bring people closer to God.
What are some of the positive things that church choir singing does for people?
Well, that's a good question. In fact, Mark, you're asking lots of good questions, but thank you for thinking through all this. There's a lot to be said for singing in a church choir, but to me, there's a really big picture. It's a church choir should be more than a musical organization. Yes, it's a group of people who come together because singing praise to God is important in their lives, but the choir, the church choir, to me, should become a congregation within a congregation. We rehearse together, we sing together, we worship together, and in a way, it's our own little mini congregation when that's all done well and done properly. The choir has a social life. We have get-togethers or parties several times a year. And that helps people get to know each other more closely. In the past, every 3 or 4 years, the choir would take a tour, and those were great times of bonding and building community together, without even mentioning all the benefits of singing in some of the world's great venues and great churches. The choir also plans trips each year to lead worship at either Presbyterian Village North or Grace Presbyterian Village, and through that we serve together outside the church. And one thing that I'm most proud of the choir at Preston Hollow is we're very intentional about taking care of each other. We celebrate special joys in the life of a choir member, births, job opportunities, but we also try to be there in times of crisis. The choir visits other choir members in the hospital or at the loss of a loved one, and the choir also provides meals for choir families in these times. And, you know, Elise and I, both over the past couple of years, when we've had to go through surgery, we were just overwhelmed by the care and concern that the choir members showed, and it really is a family to us.
Is hymn singing in worship, congregational hymn singing, all that it could be?
Well, this is almost a trick question, in that church musicians always think that hymn singing or congregational singing can be and should be one of the most important and inspiring parts of a worship service. I think the congregational singing at Preston Hollow is stronger than at many churches, and now that we're sitting in the congregation every Sunday, I'm even more convinced of that. When I came to Preston Hollow, I would say the congregational singing was good, and probably better than many churches, better than most. But when we had the chance to extend the sanctuary and move the choir from the balcony down front, the church made a conscious decision to improve the acoustical properties of the sanctuary. Before, we had had carpet all through the sanctuary and a big drape behind the cross in the chancel. And all of that absorbed a lot of sound. And the result was that congregational participation in the liturgy and the singing was really kind of muffled. People were hesitant to speak out or sing out because basically all they could hear would be themselves. And after the renovations, we had hard surfaces everywhere, and the sounds of worship really came to life, I think in a very dramatic way. Congregational participation in both the spoken parts of the liturgy and the hymn singing were dramatically improved. I think it's now a pretty vibrant atmosphere, and people are unafraid to participate in worship, and I think we have a lot to be thankful for with that.
Sometimes people think of traditional church music as the opposite of contemporary church music. Isn't there good music for worship that is contemporary, that's being composed today?
Well, yeah, Mark, you're exactly right. The terminology for music and worship has gravitated over the years to, at least in the United States, to basically using one of two terms to describe the styles of church music. One is traditional, which Preston Hollow falls under, and the other is contemporary. To me, contemporary usually refers to worship music that is normally led by a praise band and a few singers with microphones, and they're leading worship that's based more on a pop style, for lack of a better word. And that's valid, but it's not the style we use. But in reality, I think the term contemporary refers to music that would have been written very recently in contemporary times. It's true that a lot of the examples of church music that we use in our church, sometimes those have been written hundreds of years ago. But I like to think of that as representing the unending song of praise that has been sung to God long before Christ came to earth. And it's just kind of an endless alleluia. But in any rate, there's a lot of traditional music, church music, that is contemporary in the true sense of the word. For example, when Hal Hobson worked at Preston Hollow, I would guess that he would sometimes write an anthem or a hymn or a psalm setting, sometimes just days before the service in which it would be used. And you just really don't get any more contemporary than that.
We sort of touched on this lightly earlier, but what role does a pipe organ play in music for worship?
Well, for centuries, and Mark, you know this as well as I do, the pipe organ has been known as the king of instruments. There are a lot of good reasons for that, but the organ is uniquely designed to produce a lot of sound. I mean, so much, and I'm oversimplifying this, but it produces so much sound that it's really one of the few instruments that can be played by one person and produce enough sound to be able to easily lead a large group of people in singing. And we're so blessed with a wonderful 69-rank pipe organ, and it was built for the church by the Goulding and Wood Organ Company of Indianapolis, and I'm trying to think that was around 2002, Mark, somewhere in that area, but it's a fairly recent installation for the church. But the company designed this instrument so that it not only is a fine instrument for playing the great organ literature, but it's also really designed to be excellent in leading congregational worship. And we're really fortunate to have such a great instrument.
When it comes to planning and enhancing worship, what are the roles that church musicians play in that process? And sort of a tangential question, what kind of training do church musicians require?
Well, at Preston Hollow, the music team works really hard to find music that supports things like the scripture readings, the theme of the service, the sermon topic, and liturgical season. And sometimes it's difficult to find exactly the right music to really enhance the service, but that's always the goal. When I was director of music, I would get the sermon plans and scriptures at least 6 months in advance. That required a lot of advance work for Blair Mone, our senior pastor. But he did that, and it was really helped to me. That gave me lots of time to select the right anthem for each service. And it also allowed me, if we wanted to do something new that we might need to order, we could order it, receive it, get it processed into the music library so that we could rehearse it for at least 6 weeks before the service in which we would use it. And then also when Blair was here, we would meet 2 weeks ahead to plan the hymns for the upcoming services. It was really a collaborative effort, and I think paid off in the unity of the service. And as far as the training, I can only speak from my experience, and that is I had a bachelor's degree in music education and then a master's degree in sacred music. And those are fine, and they're very useful. But to me, the most important thing, a church musician needs to love God, love the church, and love serving others. And I think that outweighs a good bit of the musical training that we get. I think a music director in the church needs to be more than just a musician. It needs to be part of the ministerial staff of the church.
How important is it to work together with, you've touched on this, but to work together with the broader church staff, including pastors and church educators and that sort of thing?
Well, I can't imagine anything worse than being on a church staff where staff members don't seem to have a feel for working as a team. For the entire time I was here, and I see evidence that this is still true, the staff worked together beautifully. There was never any territorial squabbling, and everybody supported the other staff members really in a beautiful way. And this working hand in hand is, to me, that's how a church staff should work, but it doesn't always turn out that way. That's kind of a thing that works from the top down, and I think that at Preston Hollow, that was directly influenced by the attitude of our senior pastors when Blair was here and now with Matthew. To me, those are both great leaders, and they foster a real cooperative spirit among the staff.
How do you think church music will evolve over the next few generations?
Well, during my career as a church musician, I was concerned by the direction of so many churches as they turned away from traditional church music practices. Some churches gave up their organs to have them replaced by a praise band. Some churches disbanded their choirs or at least relegated them to a service other than their primary worship time. They gave up their hymnals and just projected the words to the praise choruses on the screens. And now it's not that that's gone away, but I see churches that have done this that are now going back to more traditional styles. They're adding the choir and organ back into the service. Their churches that let go of the hymnals are now turning back to the more sound theology of hymnody. The praise choruses have a place, and they're really good, but they, at least to me, they tend to be a little repetitive, and the theme of hymns often has a great theological message for us. They have life lessons for us, it's just hard to overstate the importance of the hymns that we sing every Sunday. It does seem to me that the pendulum is swinging back a little more towards traditional church music, and I hope that's the case.
Terry, what are the real joys of being a church musician? And on the other side of that coin, what are the challenges?
You know, what are the challenges? The challenges are just being part of a congregational staff. Sometimes you get a call in the middle of the night to from a choir member that they've lost a family member, or someone's had an emergency surgery, and that's a good thing that we can be there to respond, but I think it means also that church staff members, not just church musicians, but all church staff members, are pretty much on call 24/7. And but in the grand scheme of things, that's also a blessing because we get to be there for people in times of need or when they need someone to reach out. One of my favorite phrases is that, you know, we all as Christians need to be God's hands in the world, and that's just one way we can do it. So, you know, it, even though it challenges our schedules sometimes, it's really a blessing. On the other side, I just don't know I could ever count the joys of being a church musician. I can't imagine what would be better for me than to be a musician in church, to be a musician in the house of the Lord. I could have no higher calling or a more satisfying life than helping to lead the music of praise and thanksgiving for so many people. I've had the chance to work with a lot of professional musicians, either in the studio or in concert situations, and it's always thrilling, and musically, it's just really satisfying. But nothing is better to me than working with amateur singers. A lot of the church choir singers that I've worked with through the years, I mean, a large group, a large percentage, more than most people would think, a lot of them don't read music. At least they don't read it very well, if at all. A lot of them have no formal training as a singer. And a lot of those people, their joyful noise really may not be very joyful to anyone but themselves. And to take singers of so many levels of musical competence and then put them into a choir and try to mold all those levels into one cohesive group, that's just one of the greatest joys in the world to me. If people talk about amateur singers, sometimes that's not always put in a positive light. But the word amateur is derived from a Latin word that means to love. And so church choir singers aren't singing because they have to. They're singing because they love to. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that. And I'm really grateful I've had the opportunity. And I think a special joy for me during my years at Preston Hollow was that I got to work with two incredible music team members, Annette Albrecht, our organist for many years, and Mark, someone you know very well, our children's choirs and handbell director for many years, Judy Milson. Even though we're all retired now, I'll always be grateful for their willingness to share their talents and their love of God so beautifully with so many people. And I would also say that it was such a blessing that to call them some of the best friends I've ever had. And I think I said this at my going away party a couple of years ago on my retirement, but it still rings true. I still can't believe the church paid me to do the music ministry here. The church, the truth is I would have done that for free.
Now you tell us.
Yeah. But I loved every day here, and I consider myself one of the most blessed people I know to have had the opportunity to serve this great congregation.
Terry, this church has been blessed by your leadership and your presence for so many years, and we're so delighted that you and Elise are sitting out in the congregation from week to week now. Thanks for all that you've done for the service of music and the service of God and for the service of Preston Hollow.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate your time.
This recording was made in The Booth, a ministry of Preston Hollow Presbyterian Church in Dallas, Texas. For more information about The Booth, visit www.phpc.org.